is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my good colleagues, Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, Keeping the Long War Journal, and Ambassador Hussein Haqqani of the Hudson Institute, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States. The ceasefire in place in Gaza has been interrupted, we're told, anecdotally by the IDF and by men who present themselves as Hamas. However, all ends of wars are ragged, especially civil wars and civil strife similar to Gaza. So I turn to you, Mr. Ambassador, not what's in it for Gaza, not what's in it for Israel, but at the meeting last week, the extraordinary meeting at Sharm el-Sheikh, a resort on the Red Sea in Egypt, the attendance was impressive. Who was represented? What countries were participating? Europe, Islamic states, Arab states, Middle Eastern states. All of this was a moment for the President of the United States to emphasize a utopian future in which Gaza will be rebuilt and people will live in harmony. So I ask you specifically, what's in it for a major capital that will have much to say about the next 10 and 20 years? That is Saudi Arabia, particularly at Riyadh, Mohammed bin Salman. What's in it for Mohammed bin Salman to have a ceasefire in Gaza now? Good evening to you.
Good evening. We must remember that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was not present in Sharm el-Sheikh. And the reason was because Saudi Arabia was not certain that the deal that was being announced was the kind of deal that would lead to what Saudi Arabia thinks is the better future for the region, a more integrated region, a region that accepts Israel, but an Israel that accepts a Palestinian state. What was announced in Sharm el-Sheikh had nothing to do with any of that. There was nothing said about future settlements. There was nothing said about a future Palestinian state. In fact, Prime Minister Netanyahu, as soon as he got back to Israel, gave an interview in Hebrew saying, there's not going to be any mention of a Palestinian state. So it was essentially just a ceasefire. The President of the United States wanted that, and he wanted to get credit for it. And a lot of countries and their leaders were willing to be there to pay homage to him and show him respect and say, we like that. The ceasefire is tenuous at best. There's been Israeli strikes in the last 24 hours, which have killed all 44 more people in Gaza. There are Hamas activists already on the streets, and there have been reports of people who are non-Hamas affiliated being killed or executed. So it seems that essentially it was a hostage deal made to look out like a ceasefire. Essentially an agreement that Israel will release certain prisoners Hamas want to release, and in return, Hamas will return the hostages that were alive and that were had. The TV moment has gone. The tweets have been sent out. The truth social posts have been made. Now what happens on ground is a different matter. And Saudi Arabia, which really does want a long-term settlement of the issues, it does want a Palestinian state, and it does want to maintain its leadership of the Arab Muslim world, by securing that, is not very pleased with the tenuous nature of the agreement so far.
Bill, a very good evening to you. I ask another capital, Cairo, which is the capital of the state where the ceasefire was signed. What's in it for Cairo to have a ceasefire in Gaza? They've been watching for 2 years, the fighting. Why now? Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, John. Good evening, Hussein. First, I want to echo what Hussein said. It was always a mistake to view what happened here as a peace agreement. That was certainly a sales job to boost the Trump administration. But it's a tenuous ceasefire / hostage exchange at best. The problem is, look, I think the Israelis would just like the problem in Gaza to be tamped down, right? They want to, they're not going to get peace as long as Hamas exists and as long as the Palestinian Authority remains a corrupt organization that refuses to hold an election and take care of its people. But as far as Egypt goes, Egypt's paid a very significant cost with the Houthis striking at shipping passing through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait and the Red Sea. I saw estimates that it was losing anywhere from $30 to $50 million a month for traffic not going through the Suez Canal. But Egypt also has its own problems at home domestically. And once the Arab street in Egypt gets riled up over the situation in Gaza, that weakens the Sisi government. That's something that an unelected government run by, you know, the former head of a general. These are situations that cause instability. So the Egyptian government would like that issue also to just go back to a slow simmer as opposed to a boil as it's been.
And Egypt also doesn't want hundreds of thousands of Gazan refugees, yeah, Palestinians coming into Egypt. Egypt has been very particular about it. They have their own peace with Israel. And they have, as far as they're concerned, they have a pan-Arab interest in the Palestinian issue, but it's no longer the past where they would fight for the Palestinians. And they don't want to also have to fight with the Palestinians once they come in as refugees, since many of these refugees will probably be Hamas supporters.
Let me ask.
And that also applies to Jordan as well, right? The Palestinians, absolutely, even though they support the cause, the Palestinian people coming across those borders is destabilizing for these regimes.
Mr. Ambassador, Doha, principal in the negotiations over the last 2 years until that airstrike by the Israelis. What's in the ceasefire that Qatar wanted? We're told there's a defense pact in train. I don't know if that's related to the ceasefire or not.
Well, we do not know what's happening between Qatar and the United States at multiple levels. Are the Qataris going to become the first country to actually have a airbase in the United States? We really do not know what's going on. There's lack of transparency there. But here's what Qatar's interest is. Qatar does not want the destruction of Hamas. Qatar is invested in Hamas. Hamas's leadership was in Qatar. If you remember, the Israelis tried to eliminate it there. Qatar sees that as a leverage point for itself. It is the Arab country that talks to, hosts, and engages with all the rogues of the greater Middle East. And so when the Americans need to talk to any of them, they think that being in that position gives them power. So if anything, their interest in this deal, which was one of the weaknesses of the deal, was that the component that dealt with Hamas disarmament and Hamas actually not having any role in the future of running Gaza was relatively weak in the deal that was announced. And I think Qatar kept things that way. And Bill might want to say something on it, but I think Qatar does not want the elimination of Hamas, whereas Egypt, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, they may actually all be quite happy at the demise of Hamas politically, if possible.
Bill, I welcome but I also want you to then go to Ankara, what's in it for Turkey, but start with Qatar.
Yeah, I concur. All of those countries Hussein mentioned would be happy if Hamas went away. It's been more of a thorn at this point, as well as the Iranian influence on Hamas is significant. The Turks are in the same position as the Qataris, in that they're actual supporters of Hamas and they don't want to see Hamas defeated. And this, so again, it's not a peace agreement. This ceasefire allows Hamas to survive. That is in the interest of the Turks. That is interest of the Qataris. I think that's why these two were influential in getting this ceasefire. Any break. So, and the other problem that's going to exist here for the Israelis is that when, and I believe it's inevitable that the fighting resumes because Hamas refuses to disarm. It attacked Israeli soldiers and killed two over the weekend. That's what prompted the Israeli airstrikes. So once the fighting resumes, it's going to be difficult for the Israelis. It places them in a bind because Trump built the expectation that there's peace there. And as always, The Israelis are going to be blamed for this. Just as the Israelis were blamed for attacking, for launching attacks and fighting in Gaza after Hamas launched its October 7th 2023 attack. That the Israelis were justified to do so. No country would accept that. But the Israelis are going to be blamed when the fighting resumes. As long as Hamas is able to maintain some semblance in the Gaza Strip, that's a win for Qatar. It's a win for the Turks.
And Mr. Ambassador, Erdogan is sympathetic to the Muslim Brothers. He might be one. The Muslim Brothers have sanctuary in Turkey since their ouster from Egypt. Hamas is an extension of the Muslim Brothers. Ankara, what's in the ceasefire for Ankara, given its commitment to the Muslim Brothers?
I think exactly what Bill said and what I said about Qatar applies to Turkey as well. President Erdogan is not interested in the elimination of Hamas. And his angle in all of this was to save Hamas for a future renewal. And so essentially, Israel had to give in to whatever the deal was, primarily to accommodate the President of the United States. But it's not very clear what Turkey and Qatar have offered the United States that the U.S. put all its weight behind their idea, which essentially keeps Hamas intact.
And Ankara right now, does it feel confident it's getting the map that it wants? Erdogan makes hostile remarks now and again against Israel. Is he prepared to match up against Israel, or is this troublemaking?
When Erdogan took over as president many years ago, Turkey was a medium-sized NATO member. And now Turkey is seen as a greater Middle East heavyweight. It is brokering peace between Pakistan and the Taliban. Turkish head of intelligence was present at that negotiation in Doha. Qatar and Turkey are now the two go-to countries to deal with all Islamist radical groups. And so that is what is in it for Ankara, greater influence. And I think so far, Erdogan is doing pretty well.
Bill Rajo and Hussein Akhane, my colleagues, commenting on the ceasefire, what we know so far. We have to turn to another area where there's said to be a ceasefire. That's along the Afghanistan-Pakistan border. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.